We are the Mystery History Podcast. I'm Allison.
I'm Rachel.
Welcome to episode 169 on the Tex Arcana Phantom Killer, otherwise known as the Moonlight Murders.
Dum, dum, dum.
What a pretty name, Moonlight Murders.
Moonlight Murders. Yeah, it's not usually that pretty, is it?
No, not during the murders.
Sounds like a classical piano song.
Killing me like softly.
Like Moonlight Sonata.
So if you have listened to us from the beginning, you might have heard something about this episode before. We actually, Jordy and I, covered it early on in our careers as podcast hosts in episode 18. But I think this one will be far better.
I don't know if you can say better. It will be different.
Yes, Rachel did the notes on this, so I did the notes on the last one, so we'll get her hot take on this topic.
Indeed.
But before we get into it, we always have business to attend to. Ooh.
Yep.
First order of business is very important. We have Christmas cards.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie has done a wonderful job at designing a Christmas card, and we will not tell you what's on it, but it's amazing.
Yes, it is.
And you should probably have one if you want one. We have a limited supply, so it's first come, first serve. We've already gotten some people sending us your addresses like crazy people. We could be murderers.
You know,
right. We're not. So you're free to send us your address. We promise we don't have time to come visit you.
We certainly don't. And if you act like we might murder people, then we're going to end up with a whole bunch of extra Christmas cards and nothing to do with them. So.
Yeah, that's true. We don't murder people.
Don't talk sense to these people yet. Wait until after we get their address and send them a Christmas card.
Right. So we do have those limited supply. Send us your information if you would like one. Once they're gone forever.
Forever.
Forever. Next order of business, TeePublic. You know, that new site that we've got all of our merch on with some of Jamie's designs. We got some OG designs on there. Any kind of stylish shirt, sweatshirt, whatever you want, you can get. That sale that we've been talking about is going on, it tells me, for 30 more hours
from like right now.
For right, there's a countdown. 30 hours, 6 minutes and 40, 39, 38 seconds.
Oh my gosh. That's stressful.
It is stressful, and Christmas is right around the corner, folks, and you know anyone, your grandma would love one. You should order one.
You definitely should.
Mhm. And then you could always follow us on social media. I feel like we forget to plug that a lot, so I'm trying to like do that more. For the people that just stumble upon us. We have a Facebook and an Instagram that you can follow us on, Mystery History Podcast, on either of those. We also have a TikTok that I'm not great at. But still, from time to time, you might see something on there that you might like.
Perhaps.
Possibly. We don't have time to murder people or post on TikTok frequently.
We don't have time to figure TikTok out is what the problem is.
That's true. The last thing we have to say today on the business is episode suggestions. We have gotten quite a few of them.
Yay.
And we love it. So please send us your suggestions. We are scheduling out to January, hopefully sooner rather than later. For poor Jamie's sake, who does all of the art for our episodes, and we love her dearly, but we just can't get our shit together.
Nope. Never have, never will.
So she would really appreciate it, I'm sure. And we would too.
Yes, we would. Give us your suggestions, please.
Okay. Well, I think that's all I had to say about that.
Okie dokie.
Okay, let's get started.
All right. Well, the violent crime spree of the Phantom Killer started on February 22nd. Not 27th. 22nd.
You're pulling me.
I am. Where did I even get that number? 1946 at 11:45 p.m. Jim Hollis, who was 25, and his date, Mary Jean Larry, who was 19, had gone to the movies, and afterwards they parked their car on a secluded road that was considered a local lover's lane area.
Do you know about any lover's lanes around here? I never been to one.
No.
Okay. Me neither.
I don't know that there's anywhere like specific where like multiple people would go. There's plenty of places to go, just not anywhere that's the designated lover's lane that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I feel that could get crowded.
I'll tell you where not to go. The place I almost got arrested at. Don't go there. Indeed. So they were interrupted by a man wearing a white cloth mask with eye holes, which is super creepy, shining a flashlight through the window on the driver's side of the car. Jim told the stranger that he had the wrong car. What?
That's not for us.
Yeah, you're actually at the wrong spot, sir. I'm gonna need you to move along. Like, that would scare the crap out of me, and I don't think I would say you're at the wrong car. Like, right. That's just an interesting way to address someone with a hood and the holes in their eyes. The hooded man replied, "I don't want to kill you, fella, so do what I say." The gunman ordered the pair out of the car and instructed Jim to take off your goddamn britches. That's a quote.
Holy.
Yeah. Jim was then struck in the head twice with the pistol. The sound of Jim's skull fracturing led Mary Jeanne to tell investigators later that she thought her boyfriend had been shot.
Holy cow, that's loud.
That's terrifying.
I can't imagine being hit, like, pistol whipped. Not for me.
Not for me either. That sounds terrible. Don't sign me up for that.
No.
And, like, fracturing your skull and, like, it making a sound.
That would have some velocity. You'd have to, like, really get down on there. Well,
yeah, I don't like it.
And this whole, like, mask situation he's got going on. Do you remember Jason Voorhees, whenever he wore the sack mask?
Mm-hmm.
He only had one eye hole, though. And I didn't like that either. I feel like the two eye hole approach is smarter.
Smarter for the killer, yes.
Have you ever covered one eye and tried to do anything?
I don't know that I have, but I can imagine that your depth perception's probably off pretty bad.
Man, I scratched my cornea one time. I've done it several times. I remember. Well, this is another time.
Oh, this is a different time.
Yeah, I did it at work. And that is like the worst pain. Luckily, it subsides fast, but like in a day. But I had to drive myself to the emergency room to try to get those cocaine eye drops that they give you. And I swear to God, I was worried I was going to wreck my car because you can't.
You should not have been driving under that condition. Nobody was going to drive you.
No, I took my damn self. This was not too long ago, like 2 years ago.
That makes sense. How did you even scratch your cornea at work?
I want to say it was my bangs again. My bangs have cut my cornea twice in my lifetime.
Your bangs, like your hair?
Yeah, like right now, how they're at the perfect height to go in an eyeball.
Is that how you cut them when I took you?
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, a piece of hair. I was blow drying my hair and a piece of hair fell right there and scratched it.
How is that possible?
It's a freak accident, man. I don't know. It happened twice.
Either grow your hair longer or keep it shorter. What is wrong with you?
I don't know. It just
the bangs are not worth it.
Never.
Just let them grow. Just let them grow and keep them like below the eye. That's ridiculous.
It's straight ridiculous that it's happened to me two times.
I didn't even know your hair could cut your cornea.
Anything can cut your cornea.
That's weird because the only time I've ever heard of that happening to anybody else is my brother. And I think it's happened twice to him, but it was with like a rock that shot up from using the weed whacker, and he was supposed to have safety glasses on and didn't, and it cut his eyeball. not a piece of hair.
Well, tell him that I'm going to steal his story because that's way better than mine.
That's ridiculous.
It was a rock that ricocheted off of 15 things and hit me in the eye.
That's much better than my bangs cut me.
It literally anything would be better than that. I got shot in the eye with a BB gun. I mean, I will take anyone's story over mine. But yeah. So I'm just
ridiculous.
Saying. Yeah. Too high approach. Smart way to go.
It's the better way to go. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're back to it. So Jim got bonked on his nog really hard. So loud she thought it was a gunshot, which sounds awful. As Jim fell to the ground with a fractured skull, the assailant turned to Mary and struck her with a blunt object. Then he told her to run, which I don't like.
Nope.
She fled while their attacker stomped on Jim's body. The attacker caught up with her and asked her why she was running. And it's like, bitch, you told me to.
That would be... I would be so, like, scared at that point.
Is he Michael Myers? She was running and he caught up with her?
I know. How? I would like to see that. Yeah. Mm. How? I'm assuming she was wearing high heels or something stupid like that.
You take them off every time. Or you just don't wear them.
Ever.
Crocs to every party. They got glitter ones.
I don't know if those are even better to run in, but...
Evie says you put them in sport mode where you flip the thing back.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay, so yeah, he caught up to her and he said, why were you running? Even though he had told her to run. And Mary was struck again and then sexually assaulted with the assailant's pistol. Ugh.
That would also be terrifying.
Hopefully his finger was nowhere near the trigger because that would be like the worst.
That would be the worst.
Like accidentally?
And that would be so scary.
Ugh.
Like everything, how awful that would be aside, just like the fact that you could be shot from the inside would be, that just does not sound like a good thing.
Never, never. During the assault, Mary said, go ahead and kill me, which caused the attacker to flee. Mary was able to make it to a nearby house and woke up the residents who called the police. Meanwhile, Jim regained consciousness and flagged down a passing car who also alerted the police. Both Jim and Mary described their attacker as around 6 feet tall, but Mary said that he was a light-skinned African-American and Jim said that he was a tanned white man. Mary would move to Oklahoma. The trauma was too much for her to live that near to the accident, which I could totally, anytime you drive by the road or any, I mean, that would be,
yeah.
Jim told the police that their assailant would kill the next couple that he attacked.
I want to say something before I forget.
Okay.
Later, they find a shoe print, like they have footprints. And they say, I don't think I put in here, but they say that the person's shoe size is 9 to 10.
Okay.
And I'm just thinking about it because if they said he's 6 feet tall, is that normal shoe size for a 6 foot tall person? Because I don't feel like it is. A men's 9 to 10. If it's a man, I don't know. Maybe my husband just has big feet, but he's 6'2" and has size 12 feet.
Well, think about you. You're almost 6 foot, right?
I'm 2 inches shorter than that.
And you wear an 11.
Nope, I wear a size 9.5.
Do you? I wear an 11.
Which is women's. And in men's, that's an 11.5, I think. Is
no,
it two
is
sizes?
Lower.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm. You're lower. So... I wear an 11, and I think I wear a 9 in men's. Are you Googling because you don't believe me right now?
No, I'm just going to believe you because that makes sense. It's two lower. Okay.
Yeah.
So you wear a 9 in men's.
Correct. And I'm 5'9".
And
nine.
You're 5. I don't know. Maybe that is normal. I thought guys' feet were bigger, too.
Yeah. Maybe he's
like
just
generally. It just
feet.
Is weird that he would be 6 foot and be size 10. I don't know if that's normal or not. Anybody that's listening that is 6 foot and has size 10, don't be offended because I don't know what I'm talking about. But it just struck me as we're reading this. I was like, I feel like that's like small for that height. But I don't know. Anyways.
What size shoe does Brian wear?
12s.
Okay, because Josh is 6'4", and he wears a 13. So, I mean, I don't know. Shoes are weird. I thought you had a bigger foot.
Nope.
Right there, it goes to show you. I'm shorter than you, but I have a bigger clodhopper.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I don't know.
Just bigger really than you in general? Know. Yeah, a-hole?
I mean, your feet are. I have, like, bony feet, and your feet are, like, normal.
I have Flintstone feet.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's completely normal. I don't know. Anyways, on March 24th, 1946, so like a month later, at around 8:15 a.m., a motorist discovered Richard Griffin, who was 29, and his girlfriend, 17-year-old Polly Ann Moore. That's quite an age difference, just saying.
Now, is this picture that you have here, is that them?
That is actually the next.
Okay.
Killing. Oh, because that guy looks way young.
Like six. Yeah. He looks about six.
That is not Richard Griffin. Okay. That is someone else. So they found these two in Richard's car parked about a mile outside of Texarkana. And at first glance, the couple appeared to be sleeping. Richard was found between the front seats on his knees, head resting on his hands, his pockets turned out, while Polly Ann was face down in the back seat. Closer investigation revealed that Richard had been shot once in the head while in the car, and it was surmised that Polly Ann was shot in the head while on a blanket outside the car and dragged into the back seat. It rained overnight, so before they were found, and the crime scene, you know, was a mess. There wasn't any thing to really get there as far as fingerprints or footprints or anything goes, because people were walking around making footprints and all the fingerprints were washed away. But they did find a .32 cartridge at the scene. .32 caliber cartridge, yeah. This next couple is who the picture is of.
Okay. This makes more sense. I mean, really, not kinda. He looks like he's 6 years old, but
does look like he's 6 years old. I don't know. That's very bizarre. I wonder if there's something with like it being a picture of newspaper and it's all old. Maybe it's making him look younger somehow. I don't know.
It looks like they didn't have any pictures of him at the time, so they used a picture whenever he was like in fourth grade.
Yeah, because the Betty Jo with him looks like his mother.
Yes. I don't know. Different time. On Saturday night, April 14th, Paul Martin, who was 17, not 6 years old, picked up his friend Betty Jo Booker, 15, at the local VFW hall where she had been playing saxophone with the band. It was after 2 a.m. when they drove off. And it was
hold on. It's 1946.
She's 15.
A 17-year-old picks up a 15-year-old at 2 a.m. And she's been playing the saxophone with a band at the VFW hall, where I'm sure there's a bunch of drunk old men. Like,
they sound like
that's just weird. Yeah, sure. But this is 1946.
Very progressive.
I don't know. Right?
So it was after 2 a.m. when they drove off, and it was the last time the two would be seen alive. When Betty Jo didn't come home, authorities were alerted and search parties were organized to look for the missing couple. Paul was found first at 6 a.m. His body was lying by the side of the road, and he had been shot 4 times with bullet holes in his face, left shoulder, right hand, and the back of his neck. His car was recovered a mile away, abandoned, with the keys still in it.
Mm-hmm. The hand. Like, he put up his hand. Ugh.
And the neck. I mean, that's gotta be bad, right? in the face. I'm anywhere. I don't want to be shot ever.
No. None of it sounds good. Ugh. Betty Jo's body was found later that Sunday, 2 miles away in a wooded area. She had been shot in the head and once in the chest. Her saxophone would later be found nearby, still in its case. They found a bullet and a cartridge, and I found these FBI files. So some of this was like, at the time, in 1946, this is what was going on. So this was just wild. Anyways, in these FBI files I found, it says that they found the specimens that they found were most similar to those fired from a 32 caliber Colt automatic pistol. Though it is noted that there are some foreign made weapons that have the same general style rifling characteristics as the Colt. So they found casings and bullets. They also found 3 latent fingerprints. They confirmed Betty Jo had been sexually assaulted, but they never did get to find out if Polly Ann had been sexually assaulted because the Undertaker embalmed her body before officers could do a complete investigation. So not only did it like rain at the site of their, situation, washing away all this evidence, but then they didn't get to check her to see if she was sexually assaulted either because the Undertaker just took her and embalmed her. Like, how does that happen?
How does that happen? I feel like they don't release a body until they're done with the autopsy, like the investigation.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's what happened.
That's stupid. Awful.
Yeah.
Stupid. On May 3rd, around 9 p.m., farmer and deputy sheriff Virgil Starks sat in a chair in his living room reading a newspaper. His wife, Katie, was in bed when she heard the sound of his body fall. When she got up to investigate, she found her husband still in his chair, but slumped over and bleeding profusely. He had been shot in the head twice from an outside window and was killed instantly.
That's, and it was like, the back of his head.
That's one of my worst nightmares.
I don't know. Kind of sounds like a good way to go.
But like,
somebody, you don't know it's coming and you're dead instantly.
Yeah, but somebody like creeping through the windows.
Well, yeah, that's creepy, but you don't know you're dead. You
right.
Didn't see
well,
him.
Katie knows. God.
Yeah, this is bad for Katie, not for... I mean, it's bad for Virgil, don't get me wrong. Worse for Katie.
She immediately tried to call for help, but she was also shot twice in the head. But miraculously, she didn't die. One bullet passed completely through her nose, and the second bullet broke her jaw and lodged under her tongue.
Yep.
Oh, my God. You ever get a popcorn kernel stuck underneath there?
No.
Oh, I've had it happen before and like you can't get it out. I could not even imagine that.
I get them stuck in my gums sometimes, like in the back of your teeth, teeth and your gums.
Sometimes I get them stuck in between like my bottom of my tongue and like the side of my mouth. And then, like, it's in there and you know it's in there, but you can't get it out. I would imagine that's 10 times worse being a bullet than a popcorn thing.
Probably. The authorities believe the bullets came from a 22 caliber Colt Woodman automatic or similar type gun. She crawled across the floor. She heard the attacker struggling to get in through a kitchen window in the back of the house, and she fled out the front door in her nightgown and ran to her neighbor's house.
Good for you, Katie.
Yeah, seriously. After getting shot in the head twice,
God.
Can you imagine opening the door to that? Her nose is blown off, and she's got a bullet going through her jaw and under her mouth, too.
No.
Ugh. That would be so scary to open the door to that.
I'd probably have a heart attack before I got anywhere.
Probably
just, like,
me
sheer
too.
Panic.
Right? That's crazy. So they believe the assailant came into the house and was looking for her. And once they realized that she wasn't there, they fled. She was rushed to the hospital and survived and lived in Texarkana until she died in 1994.
Whoa. I don't think I could stay somewhere that I got shot.
I don't think I could either. Especially because they don't, spoiler alert, they never catch this guy.
And her husband's dead, so she's probably by herself, unless hopefully maybe she found another nice man. And but still, that doesn't mean
immediately
anything. The other one died.
Yeah, like, ugh. I don't think I could stay there. Uh-uh. I would definitely end up like living somewhere completely different and hiding out for sure.
Oh, yeah. No windows.
Mm-mm. They were able to get a flashlight, fingerprints, a palm print, footprints, a purple fiber from an unknown source, and a bullet and cartridges and blood. I found in these. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just say that, like, the fibers that they find, that just amazes me.
Me too. It's wild when they're able to be like, this came from this carpet.
Yeah. It's like,
what?
How many fibers does one have in their house of just everything in your house? I just can't.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's crazy. And when they sent that purple fiber to the FBI to be like checked, they sent it and said it was hair, like unidentified hair that they had found. And then the FBI wrote back and was like, there was no hair, but there was a purple fiber. So it must have been so small that you couldn't even tell what it was, too.
Wow.
I don't know. So, again, in these FBI files, I thought this was just interesting that they detailed the sending in of these blood samples. Like, they had blood on the linoleum, blood on a paper bag type thing outside the window. Just blood everywhere, as you can imagine. So they sent all these samples in. They also sent Virgil and Katie's blood so that they could type all of the different blood samples and determine if they were the same type. And that's like, they used that to be like, that's not this person, that's not this person. But like, how many different blood types are there? Like six?
I don't know.
And like, most people have the same two.
Right.
I don't know either. But like, something like that. It's just crazy how far we've come. In this, it's just wild. And this was in like 1950 almost. So I don't know, just blows my mind.
Yeah, it was like the Wild Wild West back then. You could get away with so much crap. You can't get away with anything now. They'll find you in a minute.
Yep.
While the locals went into a full-fledged panic, obviously, they were stocking up on guns, calling for curfews, devouring sensationalistic news headlines. Several law enforcement agencies were involved in the investigation. So we've got the FBI, the Texas Rangers, which is wild that that's a thing. I love it. Miller County Sheriff's Department, Cass County Sheriff's Department, the Texarkana Police, and the Arkansas State Police. So there's lots of law enforcement agencies trying to find this person who's shooting up their town. And people.
Yeah, so like pretty much everybody that can be is.
Yep.
So during that time, some local teens tried some vigilante business. They would wait for the killer in parked cars with loaded weapons. There were a couple of close call incidents of mistaken identity with law enforcement, and the police shut that down. But the police also employed decoy tactics. They waited in cars in remote areas, pretending to be young people out with officers hiding around nearby. All of that work and all the manpower that they were putting into this, nothing came of it. The killer was never caught, and they investigated lots of people, but all of them were cleared of suspicion at some point. So some of the examples, and these ones were guys that I've found. There's like a ton of examples on Wikipedia if you're interested in going and looking at it. But these two, I don't even know if they're on the Wikipedia list. I found them in the FBI files that I was reading through, and it didn't say why they were a suspect, like this first guy, but I can kind of see like where this came from. His name was Claude Wesley Varbel, and the FBI have him in their records. He was some redheaded white guy that weighed 146 pounds and was born in Akron, Ohio. Oh. He was staying in Dallas, Texas. There was information about him and his time in the Navy. And in, you know, it goes through all of his time in the Navy. He apparently got a lot of captain's masts, which have you ever heard of that before?
No.
I haven't either. I don't know if that's still a thing or not in the Navy, but it's basically like you were bad. It's not a good thing. Most of them that he got were for being drunk, or not showing up and doing what he was supposed to be doing. So over the course of like a year, he got multiple captain's masts for those things. And he would get restricted to the ship for 30 days. At one point, he was transferred to different places, but, you know, I guess they were trying to find a fit for him and they just couldn't. So eventually, like while they were sending him to be discharged, I think he was still getting in trouble. like they're sending him from I don't know where, but he goes through Japan and is being sent to Washington, like Seattle, Washington, to be discharged. And like he's still getting in trouble on his way there. He ended up being honorably discharged, though. So good for him, I guess.
Good for him, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just saw this information on him in these FBI files, and then I didn't get to read everything because there was like 5 million pages. But I'm sure somewhere in there it says what became of him, perhaps.
Well, and I just did some Googling on this Captain Mast situation. So it looks like it is still a thing. And basically, it's like they don't have to have a court involved. The captain can just punish them however he sees fit.
Oh, so they don't get like a trial.
No, it's just like judge, jury, and executioner all right in one. And then like a court-martial situation is when the judicial system is involved. So, I've never heard of that.
Well, he also received a deck court-martial. I don't know if that's the same thing as just a regular court-martial, but he got that for being absent over leave for 7 hours and 20 minutes, for breaking arrest, and for being something missing, I'm assuming, for a period of 23 hours and 50 minutes. They keep track of that business down to the minute.
They do. Well, it's probably pretty easy to know when somebody's not supposed to be there on a boat, right? I mean, there's only so many places you can be.
Right?
So like a deck
hiding somewhere.
Right. I'd be in the mess hall. A deck court consists of one commissioned officer and its jurisdiction is limited to minor offenses. So it's pretty much, again, just like, I'm going to tell you you're in trouble and this is what you got to do.
Interesting.
It is. Okay, the next suspect was Charles A. Coleman, and he was arrested in Paris, Texas on May 11, 1946 for rape at Atoka, Oklahoma, and removed there. This is like from a transcript.
This is from the FBI files, so yeah, it's like,
it's a little broken
shorthand.
They gave information that he was in Texarkana on nights of murders number 1 and 2. Therefore, he was considered a suspect. However, his story has been verified and he's been eliminated. Charles was in Colorado one night of murder number 3. There's no definite proof that subject of murders number 1 and 2 committed murder number 3, however. They are being considered jointly and separately. So they don't
know. They eliminated him. So it doesn't sound like they're being considered separately. And I think they should have been, because that is completely different. I don't know why they thought.
Yeah. That could have been the same guy.
Yeah. It's a different caliber of gun. So it's not even the same gun that was being used, because it was a 22 in that case. And the other two were 32s. Is that even a thing? Yeah. And I mean, why?
Yeah, nobody'd ever been attacked in their home before. It was always in cars. This is completely different situation.
So I thought that was weird. I don't know. Only one of the suspects could be directly connected to the murders, and that was suspect Yowl. Is that it, what it is? Yeah. It's spelled Youell. Not really sure how you say it. Swinney. I bet it is Yowl.
I like how you asked me. That was funny.
I know.
I would say Yowl.
Yeah. I think it is Yowl. That makes the most sense to me. This guy was a local car thief and counterfeiter. He was fingered as the phantom killer by his wife, Peggy, when she was arrested as an accomplice in one of his car thefts. After initially providing credible details about her husband's involvement in the murders, her story started changing and she started withholding information. So she was probably scared of him. Or she was scared of being incriminated in the murders herself. Hard to really say.
She probably just didn't want to be in trouble about the car theft and was like, let me roll over on this guy hard.
Super hard. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't charge this guy because everything hinged on her statement. But as his wife, she wasn't compelled to testify against him. Mm-hmm. So they basically had nothing. Some believe that Swinney's subsequent plea deal to go to prison for life for habitual car theft was his way of avoiding the murder charge and the death sentence that probably would have come with that, because we are talking about Texas.
Holy shit. You can go to jail for the rest of your life on just stealing
habitual car theft. I don't know how many cars you have to steal to get that as part of a plea deal.
So what, they were going to gas him for stealing cars? Is that would be what the plea deal, there would have been something worse, right?
I don't know. That does, yeah, that's weird. Now that we're like saying it out loud, that doesn't sound like a plea deal.
No, it sounds terrible.
And why'd they offer that to him? Well, whatever the case is, he took it and people were looking at it as him trying to avoid the murder charge and death sentence that would have come if he was like pointed as the phantom killer. Swinney was released from prison in 1974 on a legal technicality. And then he passed away in a Dallas nursing home in 1994. Dr. James Presley wrote a book, The Phantom Killer, Unlocking the Mystery of the Texarkana Serial Murders. And apparently he lays out a pretty compelling case that Swinney was the one that committed the Texarkana Moonlight murder killings.
Mm.
So I've never read the book. Can't really say for sure.
Right.
But
I'd be interested in it. Maybe I'll add that to my list.
I'm becoming more and more interested in this case. And I'll tell you what. Well, I should have let you read that last part because I'm probably going to say this next part. But these FBI files, I feel like I could spend a lot of time on this website. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of time. I don't know if it has stuff for like all of the FBI cases or what the situation is, but they had so much stuff on this and it went like way off into left field. So like I started reading all these files and I read for probably 45 minutes and I couldn't see my scroll bar. So I didn't really know how much was left. And then I looked over, like moved something so I could see my scroll bar and I was like an inch down. And I had been, and I read pretty fast. And I was like, this is a problem. I do not have enough time to read everything in here. So I started like scrolling through and I got down towards the bottom. So I don't know how this like came to and then what happened afterwards. And I tried to Google it a little bit and couldn't find anything. But in those FBI files, there were letters that were received by the police chief, I think Betty Jo's dad, maybe someone else in the police department, and then some other guy. And these letters claimed to know things about the murders. And they sent things in like a license plate number and some other information. two letters that came in were trying to extort some guy of money, and they were looking into this woman named Madeline Mary James, and they found her because they took these letters and they figured out what typewriter from checking like hundreds of typewriters. They figured out what kind of typewriter it came from. That always blows my mind, but it gets crazier. They go to the typewriter store. They ask the guy, seriously, they go to the typewriter store. They ask the guy, hey, how many of this kind of typewriters have you sold? He like gives them a couple of places. They narrow it down to this real estate office. They take handwriting samples of everybody that works in the real estate office, because some of these letters had handwriting on them too. They confirm that this lady, Madeline Mary James, that works at the real estate office, her handwriting's identical to some of the letters received, and she had access to this typewriter. And then the guy that had the extortion attempt like against him had some kind of weird connection to her, because his brother was her neighbor, and the kids, like the brother's kids, made her mad, and she lived with her mother. She kept to herself. I guess she was considered kind of weird. I'm getting the vibe from the notes in the FBI files. And that's all I could get from it. Like, I don't know. It was just wild. And then I did a quick Google and nothing really came up. Did you see anything? Were you Googling while I was talking?
I was trying to Google, and yeah, I didn't see anything either.
I couldn't see anything either. So I don't know. These FBI files, I don't know. I'm in it. I'm freaking in it.
I'm on websleuths.com, and this looks like a rabbit hole. I don't know if I have time to get into. Yeah. But I went to that FBI website that you have here.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. I mean, yeah. I Googled Dennis Rader just for funsies, and they've got a part one in here, and yeah. It's 124 pages long.
It's wild. They're like FBI reports.
Whoa. Sorry, Google. Calm down, Google. Oh God. It pulled up Dennis Rader. Why is it listening to me? I hate it.
She knows everything. But yeah, there's so much on there. I feel like I could just spend a lot of time on that website. And then, I don't know. It'd be bad. Could be very bad. Wow, I'll be over here crazy. Solving 100-year-old murders. I don't know.
They have like everything. The vault index. They have a A to Z index of, you could look up Adolf Hitler. What? I want to see.
I'm telling
really
you guys. See? Okay. Well, you guys are seeing firsthand what I was worried about happening to me.
Wow, I can't.
But I'm telling you, like, get in there and start reading this stuff. So, like, it says when you get on the website that the quality of things are just based on, like, you know, some of the stuff you can't read because it's such poor quality. They took pictures and, mm-hmm. like, scanned things in. Sometimes it's good and you can read stuff, and sometimes, you know, you can't tell what things say. And they've got handwritten notes on things and stuff like that. But it's just, I feel like I could spend maybe the rest of my life reading everything on there.
Man, I just looked up Hitler, Ariel Castro. Now I'm looking at Eileen Wuornos, and I'm just in the A's.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Isn't that bananas? And don't you feel like you could, I mean, and when you start looking at the stuff they have in there, it's like the police reports, basically. Yeah. And it's like, at least, I don't know if all of them are like this, but for this case, it was a lot of like things being sent to the FBI, and like the results of what was sent to the FBI, and then people they interviewed, and it gave, you know, details into like the murders and like what they found on the scene and stuff like that. So I don't know, yo, I could spend a lot of time on there.
Whoa. Yeah, you should not have told me about this.
Sorry, I just discovered it like 3 hours ago. So
wow. Well, and then I stumbled upon websleuths.com. because Jamie had messaged whenever we had talked about the image for this episode, and she believes that the Texarkana Phantom Killer could also be the Zodiac Killer, which could be, it's about, it fits the timeline.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, like, just reading off this one thing, why I feel like the Zodiac could be the Phantom Killer. They have the same MO. The killings were at the perfect time of a Zodiac trial run while away from home, so the murders wouldn't get traced to him. They were convinced that the Phantom Killer had to be an outsider who didn't live in town because the community was so tight-knit.
Notice an outsider, though?
I mean, you'd
if
think.
If the community was so tight-knit.
You would think so. Yeah, they think that maybe he did this during, like, his cooling off period or something like that, whenever he was, like, doing his Zodiac stuff. I mean, I don't know, man. Something could be happening here.
Weird.
Huh. Yeah. So let us know what you think about that.
Yeah, guys, tell us.
And get on this FBI site and let us know who you went down the rabbit hole on.
What'd you find that we need to know? Right. So that website is vault.fbi.gov. Have fun, friends. Before I finish citing all my sources, I feel like we really should mention a little movie called The Town Who Dreaded Sundown, which is mostly fictionalized, but based on these events. And that movie came out in 1976. Allison, have you seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie. The only reason I knew about that movie is because it is talked about in Scream.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
But I'd like to see it. There was a reboot, too, I believe, in 2014, I believe.
Yeah, there was.
So that one would probably be better, maybe. Or worse.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think that is a reboot. Yeah, it's not. It's a masked maniac terrorizes the same small community where a murderer known as the Phantom Killer struck decades earlier. Oh. So I don't think it takes place at the same time. But I don't know.
I feel like it's worth a watch. It got a 6 out of 10 on IMDb, then one from 1976.
That's what I was getting ready to check.
And then the one from 2014 got a 5.6 out of 10, which I think is pretty
good.
Could
be worse. Could be way worse.
I've liked movies that are way worse.
So have I.
It's got a 2, I'm going to probably give it a whirl.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I don't know. The ratings don't actually, like, I like to look at the ratings, but I'm never like, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to watch that. Like, yeah, if I'm looking up the rating, I already intended on watching it and I'm probably still going to watch it.
Right. Well, like Deep Blue Sea, which is one of my favorite movies, got a 5.9, and I would rate that a 10 all day long.
Deep Blue Sea is a 10.
Oh, absolutely. It's a 10. The best shark movie since Jaws.
I got everything. I don't. 5.9. Get out of here.
Let's see what The Meg was. 5.6. Definitely lower than Deep Blue Sea. I agree.
I also agree with that statement.
The only thing that makes it a 5 is Jason Statham.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't that great. It was okay.
Yeah. It's too CGI.
I think I've watched it twice now because I feel like I didn't remember it the first time until I was like the second time I was like halfway through watching it. And I was like, I think I've seen this before. And I had.
Well, now there's a second one.
Is there?
Yeah. And they have dinosaurs in it and octopi.
I'm probably not going to watch that.
Let's see what that got. 5. Just a 5. And I agree. The first one was better. So if you hated the first one, you're going to hate the second one. For sure.
That's ridiculous. I just watched a show I don't even know what it was called. Darn it. I was going to tell you because I thought it was kind of good. It was a movie. It was something like Monsters and the Apocalypse or something like that.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was on Netflix. But I don't know. I was folding laundry. I was looking for something that I didn't have to watch. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it on and then I sat down and watched it, which was not the point. But I'm just telling you in case you want to watch it because I thought it was pretty good. It reminded me of, oh, shoot. What's the zombie movie? I can't remember anything. I'm terrible right now.
Like 28 Days Later.
No, the Dawn comedy the one Dead. With Emma Stone in it.
Oh, Zombieland.
Yeah, Zombieland. Mm-hmm. It was very similar to Zombieland, in my opinion. There was just the same vibe, but it was like monster insects because we exploded a asteroid that was coming and the chemicals made all the insects like mutate into these monsters. I don't know. It was pretty good. It was funny. I don't know. I liked it. Lighthearted. Check it out.
Have you ever seen Starship Troopers?
I think so.
So that movie was not good. It was from 1997. It's got, what's that guy's name? Casper. I think his name's Casper. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Casper Von Dien and Denise Richards and Neil Patrick Harris.
Huh.
It had all the makings to be amazing. And it got a 7 out of 10.
Wait, is there big bugs in that? Or did you just randomly think of that?
Yeah, that's why. That was my connection. Yes, the big bugs. There's a big, okay. big bugs.
Interesting.
Everybody should watch that movie. Just to see.
I don't know if I have seen that.
Oh, it's good.
Huh. Really?
It's not good, but it's a classic. I feel like.
You're ridiculous. The movie's actually called Love and Monsters, by the way. I just double checked. Love and Monsters on Netflix.
Okay.
I don't know. Give it a whirl. You're looking for something lighthearted.
And it's a movie?
Yeah, it's a movie.
Okay.
Anyways, I feel like we've rambled enough here at the end, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We've gone boring through our folks. Sharks, bugs.
Yeah, lots of things. I'm going to cite my sources. I used thecrimewire.com, vault.fbi.gov, texasmonthly.com. There was an article called Texarkana Murder Mystery. I thought it was a pretty good article. Okay. I didn't really use it in here very much because it was more like a personal story of somebody like returning to the town kind of situation. But I thought it was pretty interesting. And then Wikipedia, of course.
Okay. Well, now you've got some homework, guys. Go to that FBI website and dive into the abyss.
Yeah, tell us what's worth looking at.
Yeah. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 169 on the Texarkana Phantom Killer, a.k.a. the Moonlight Murders. We hope you have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.